Accession number 28361, reel 16.
General Julian Thompson, reel 16. You're saying that you made your way as if you'd come from the Finnish wedge towards the coast, and then you were attacking the Norwegians in theory.
Yeah.
What sort of strength were the Norwegians posting?
It was a Norwegian brigade.
Yes.
Was
this the Brigade North?
This is Brigade North, indeed. Mm. We were pretending, as I said before, to be the Soviet, and we were trying to cut them off all the time as they withdrew down the coast road.
Down the E6.
Yes. And so what we did to begin with was do a big hook over the mountains to come in behind them. Mm. And that took two days of slogging and a night. Mm. Before we got into the valley, over the top.
Did you manage to catch them, or were they too quick for you?
They cheated and got away.
How did they cheat?
Well, because they were running the exercise, and they wanted the exercise to go on, and so if we'd cut them off, you know, that would have brought the end of the exercise to an end. So in a way, it was a good test for us, because it was quite a flog to get across the mountains. Then the exercise was quite a long exercise. It went on for about 10 days, so it was unusually long for that.
Were you out in the field the whole time?
We were out in the field the whole time, yes. Mm.
Did you have air support at all during this?
We did have air support, yes. Mm. Provided by, I think, by the Norwegian Air Force, which was sort of playing both sides, actually.
Yes. Yeah. And what about armour? Because it's always assumed the Russians would use masses of armour.
Yes, we didn't have any armour at all.
You didn't?
No. Yeah. The only armour was provided by the Norwegians. They had a tank company that operated up there. And that armour, as I recall, was playing on both sides.
What were they? Were they leopards at that time?
They were leopards. Mm. I think they were leopards, yes. Yeah.
What did you make of the Norwegians and their level of skills and
they were very competent physically. They were tough and fit, but they were tactically pretty unsound, I thought.
Mm. What was wrong with their tactics in particular?
I think that they tended to operate as if fire support didn't exist. I think their training had taken them up to that point. Yeah. I mean, they were quite good as individual riflemen. I got the impression, but I was not. From what I saw, mind you, I was the enemy, so I wasn't seeing a lot of them. And I was the adjutant, so I wasn't actually operating right up against them, except right at the end when I was dropped in the wrong place by an American helicopter and taken prisoner. So I was then a prisoner of war, which is a very degrading thing for the adjutant to be taken prisoner by the enemy.
Very shocking.
Mm. So I was able to observe them from inside, if you like.
Yes.
And that was what led me to believe that their tactical handling wasn't all that bright. And I suppose it was a feature of the fact that they were a conscript army with very short terms of service. I think it was only a year they did or something like that. Well, there isn't, in a year, you can't train a chap to do all the things he needs to do and train him to take his place in an organisation, really, I don't think.
Well, it's probably, for their ordinary soldiers, probably the only large-scale exercise in which they'd ever take part.
Yes, in the whole of their service.
The whole of their training, because everything will be directed towards working up to that as their final big test exercise.
Sure. And certainly, I mean, I've done lots of exercises against and with the Norwegians ever since, and that's always been my opinion, that individually they're quite well trained, but the articulation of the whole leaves a great deal to be desired.
So good on basic infantry skills.
Yeah, but not good tactically, really.
What about your own fire support? Did you have notional artillery?
We had notional artillery, and we had our own mortars, of course.
And was it the same sort of pattern of events all the way through the 10 days, you trying to get ahead of them to cut the line
yes.
of retirement?
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And it was that occasion when we were finally given some helicopters, the idea being to sort of do a... Lift us over.
Yes.
That this bloody American went and dropped the stick I was in, which consisted of myself and some of Commander Headquarters, in the wrong place. Well, so we were taken prisoner.
Not unknown in the annals of warfare.
Not unknown. So I spent the last night of the exercise and the last day in custody, as it were.
So that was 10 days in Norway. Were you on spearhead then for that particular time? Was that?
How do you mean?
Training for that? Well, you said you were strategic reserve. Was this?
No, we weren't. We weren't doing our spearhead time while we were on the exercise, because spearhead, as you probably know, is when you're standing by to go anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And you're right firmly back in barracks with one half of people sort of sitting on their packed kit ready to go.
But is it training towards being capable of
going anywhere? Yes. I mean, it was training for our strategic role, yes. Mm. Yeah.
Was it the first time you've been to Norway?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry, wrong. I'd been to Norway as an umpire when I was at the depot with 41 commando. I forgot to mention that. Mm. Where we did an exercise which we did land from a submarine depot ship in landing craft that had been sent up there specially. Mm. And we did a night landing, got very wet doing it, and then fought our way down an island called Andoya Island.
Oh, yes. That's quite a long way north, isn't it?
It's a long way north. Oh, yeah.
Well, what time of year was that?
This was autumn. Mm. Very wet. Mm. Cold.
What were you supposed to be? We were supposed to be Russian naval infantry for that.
We were supposed to be Russian naval infantry, yeah. 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 Mm. Yeah.
But I understand that they used to practice night landings over ice shelf.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, there was no ice shelf, I'm happy to say, but it was bloody wet and cold. Mm.
And how long did that take, that exercise?
That wasn't all that long. Mm. I suppose it was about 4 days, something like that.
Was your objective the airfield?
Yes. How did you guess?
What else could you go to Andoya for?
That's right, it was the airfield, yeah.
Did you get onto it?
Yes.
Yeah. What did the Norwegians do on that occasion? Did they come out to meet you, or did they try and do a close defence of the...
No, they came out to meet us and fought and delayed us all the way down. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
What sort of strength were they on that occasion?
I think it was a battalion of Brigade North. It wasn't a whole brigade.
Mm. Mm. On these exercises, and did you get the same impression of them on that occasion as well? Was this a sort of...
Yes. I did. Yes.
Good up to a point, but that point determined by short...
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
What... did you ever have any contact with their home guard?
Yes, I did. Mm. Because I'm just trying to remember when it was. I think we did on that exercise that I spoke about earlier, where, not on Andoya, I didn't remember, but on the exercise when I was with 4-3 Commando. Mm. We came up against some, because they were defending bridges and that sort of thing, and we took them prisoner. Mm. And I've come up against them since on many occasions, yes.
Did they have a value? Yes.
I mean, they used to keep their weapons at home, so they were instantly available. Secondly, of course, they knew the ground very well. And so they had specific tasks which they were to carry out in wartime, which they knew perfectly well because they'd practiced them dozens of times. And I think they would have been very effective, yes.
Mm. I mean, amongst the roles they were considered for, one is obviously this business of guarding vital points, blocking lines of communication and advance by instantaneous mobilisation, that's
sure.
one thing.
Yeah.
But also it was considered at one time that if they were rendered irrelevant in that role by the advance of enemy forces, then they might indulge in guerrilla action.
Excuse me, this could be the why.
There was an idea that they would have a role as guerrillas attacking the rear. I mean, do you remember them doing anything of that sort?
I remember they had that role. I don't recall them doing that, though they might well have been doing it on these exercises, but I don't recall them doing it.
What was at Andoya when you got there at that time? What did they have in those days? on the airfield.
It was. I don't remember what was there. It was a Norwegian Air Force base, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think they were involved in sort of what we would call maritime air.
Mm.
I think, but I don't know.
Mm. And what about their defences? Because airfield defence, obviously, very important.
Yes.
To them.
I don't remember a great deal about their defences.
Mm.
I can't remember. We got to the edge of the airfield, but I don't think we were allowed on it.
Yeah.
I think we were deemed to have got there, but then they called the exercise to a stop. But I don't remember sort of running about on the airfield.
Mm.
But I think it was, you know, sort of wired off.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that was Andoria. That was 41 Commando, much earlier on.
Yeah.
And then you were back with 43.
Yeah.
And during the course of this, were you on the attack all the time, or did the Norwegians have occasion to attack you?
They mounted a counterattack.
Yes.
Well, when we first got over the mountains,
mm.
and then after that, we were on the attack
mm.
all the time. Yeah.
So primarily a defensive role for them.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
How did they conduct that defence? Did they have lines of positions in depth, or did they attempt mobile?
They just fell back in stages. I don't recall them having any sort of mobile defence at all. No.
What were their positions like? The ones they occupied, or the ones they constructed? Did they?
They didn't construct them, quite frankly. I mean, there was no sort of proper digging or.
There wasn't.
No.
Mm.
No.
Did they choose suitable locations for holding?
I think so. Again, because I wasn't in a rifle company, I couldn't. You know, I never sort of ran up against them. But I think they did succeed in how much of it was umpired, and how much was effectively done. I honestly can't remember.
Mm. And what's the ground you think suitable for that sort of tactic?
Oh yes.
Would it have been?
Oh yes. Yeah, very much so.
Okay.
Because the ground, the nature of the ground is such that armoured vehicles will have a hell of a problem manoeuvring off the road, actually.
Mm.
Because of the soft going. It's very boggy in the summer, of course,
mm.
very steep. And I think armour would have been pretty well confined to the main axis.
Mm.
There would have been places where it could have got off up farm tracks and that sort of thing. But generally speaking, the valleys there you know, they're surrounded by some pretty big mountains.
Yes.
There's no way you could get armour up onto that stuff.
Mm. So it would be primarily infantry work.
Sure. Mm. Yeah. I mean, the armour on the main axis and infantry going round the sides, which is what we were doing.
Mm. So that was a quite a large-scale effort then, a 10-day exercise.
Yeah, yeah.
Were there any other deployments you can remember?
Well, other than that,
time.
And going back to North Africa, I don't. And we did exercises in England, of course. We went to Stanford and Seney Bridge and Salisbury Plain and
was
other.
Was that part of the normal cycle?
Yeah, yeah. And my final exercise was in the commando was acting as enemy to 19 Infantry Brigade, commanded then by Brigadier David the Razor.
Fraser.
Mm.
and how did that go?
It went fine. It was quite a good exercise. We did that in Stanford, Stanford training area.
Now, he had a reputation for introducing tactical innovations and so on. Was there anything of that sort on this that you remember?
I didn't notice anything at that stage that struck me as being a tactical innovation that was going to, you know, change the world. I didn't notice it. They both.
How did the brigade do? Were they an effective force?
Yes, they did. They did all right.
Mm.
I mean, we felt rather cheesed off because we set up a very good defensive position, which they attacked, and we thought they'd done it in rather a desultory manner, and that their attack would have not succeeded. However, we were umpired out of this position, and this actually so irritated my CO that he sought permission from the umpires first, what he wanted to do was to do a counterattack.
Mm.
And this wasn't allowed because it wasn't in the game, you see. So he then said, could he patrol? So they said yes. So he said, we will mount a commando strength fighting patrol tonight. So we put in a commando night attack by three companies. He told the umpires it was a fighting patrol.
What did the umpires have to say about that?
Well, they were pretty hacked off because the enemy who'd expected to be trailing suddenly found themselves being hit by three companies. It was one of the few occasions where I've seen troops on an exercise get up and run.
How did they get that mess sorted out then? I mean, did they
That was the end of the exercise.
It stopped.
Yes.
So what had they done then? They got onto your positions and turned them round.
What they did was we had spent a lot of time digging some very good defensive positions, well concealed, and I thought difficult to attack, and they mounted an attack, which my CO, who'd been in Normandy and therefore knew a bit about fighting, reckoned was pretty pathetic and would have failed. And when he was umpired out of the position, he was pretty cheesed off.
I mean, when they got into those positions of yours...
We were just told to go. We were told by the umpires, you have been overrun.
And you went.
And they came, but the way the attack was done, they would have been massacred. So the umpires came in and said, this attack has been successful, you will leave. I mean, the Marines were starting to sort of shape up for hand-to-hand combat.
What was wrong then with the way they did the attack?
Well, they just sort of strolled in. Their tactics were dreadful. They just sort of walked in. It wasn't well done. Anyway, the umpires just said, you've been chucked or get out. So we were pushed off the position and withdrew to an assembly area in a wood.
What did they do then? Did they occupy the positions you had?
They occupied the positions we had been...
Presumably turned them round.
And turned them round,
So you knew where they'd been.
We knew where they were, So the CO, we were then sitting in this wood, brewing up probably, making a cup of tea, I expect, went off and represented the Fraser Razor, who was sort of acting as the brigadier commanding the enemy, or in fact we were the enemy, in commanding them, and the chief umpire. And he said, you know, I want to put in a counterattack because that was such a pathetic attack, or worse, that effect. I think he's probably more tactful than that. And he was told, no, you may not. So he then said, well, can I patrol? So he said, yes. So he said, well, in that case, I intend... The exercise is due to end at breakfast time the next morning. I intend to put in some fighting patrols tonight. So he then came back and said, we're going to do probably the first ever commando strength night fighting patrol, which was another name for saying he was going to put in a commando attack at night, which we did.
Reclaiming the ground,
yeah.
Were there any repercussions as a result of that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe he was sent for by Fraser, given a bollocking. I don't know.
Fraser had a reputation for having a short fuse.
Yes, he had a very short fuse. Yes.
So a memorable exercise on Stamford. Any other exercises with memorable?
No, not really. No.
What do you think you'd learned when you finished your period as adjutant at 43 Command?
I learnt a great deal about commanding a commando, and what was required, and how one should run. What constituted, you know, good company commanders and bad company commanders, and what was good tactics and bad tactics, and so on.
What is the difference between a good company commander and a bad company commander?
Cool. Well, a good company commander is effective, and a bad one is ineffective, and you know, the company reflects his competence, and if the company works well, then he's good, and if it works badly, he's useless.
Can you tell when you're looking at a troop commander whether he will or not be a good company commander? Is it possible to project forward from performance at troop level up to, or platoon level up to company level?
Not necessarily, because it depends. I mean, you may be looking at him at a stage in his development where he's not doing terribly well. He may then go away and develop and come better for some reason. He may have learned a hell of a lot in between. I think it, one would be quite lucky to be able to judge whether a platoon commander or a platoon commander is going to be a good company commander. Mm. I mean, I think you could probably tell if he was going to be fairly useless. But you wouldn't. I wouldn't be like to say, yes, he'll make a good one or a less good one, you know what I mean?
Yes. So you can pick up the negative.
You
can
pick up the negative.
Better than the positive.
Better than the positive, I think, mm. yes. Mm.
And does the same apply when you're looking at a company commander and trying to work out whether he will be effective as a commander?
Yes, I think, I mean, a company commander, in my opinion, should be able to command a battalion. He might have to.
Well, a platoon commander might have to command a company.
Indeed, he might have to command a company. But by the time a chap becomes a company commander, he's developed certain, in a certain way that makes it more easy to tell. Whereas a young platoon commander, say, in his first few months, I think it would be very difficult to judge whether he'd be a good company commander. Mm. I mean, some, I think you could say, yes, that chap would command a company, no problem at all. But others, I don't think you... you would find it difficult to tell.
Mm. Where did you go to after...
I went to the Staff College.
You went to
I passed the Staff College exam. Yeah. In those days, you had to take an exam. I can't remember how many papers, but it seemed quite a lot of papers. Tactics and military law, military history, administration.
When had you done your studying?
I'd done my studying... I was very lucky, actually. I did my studying... The exam in those days was taken... I'm just trying to remember when it was taken. I think it was taken in the spring. And I did my studying. My CO gave me a month off to study it. Mm. And he put someone else to take over my job for a month. He said, because I'd had very little opportunity to study as the adjutant, because I used to work quite late. Mm. And one did in those days two forms of study. You went to courses which they ran on various subjects like military law, military history, military writing, tactics, etc. You had to pass a practical exam, a promotion practical, which was in the form of a toot. Mm. So that lasted all day.
Who actually ran that?
Well, that was run by districts. So the district we were in, because we were stationed in Plymouth, was Southwest District. So it was run from Taunton, I suppose. Mm. I think that's where their headquarters was. And they would, the GOC was responsible for putting together a team of people to put all the candidates from every regiment in the army in his district through the practical promotion exam.
So when you went out on the ground, looked at the ground, did you have to write some kind of recommendations as a result of the questions?
No, what you did was as far as I can remember, there was some map reading questions, sort of snap map reading questions on the ground. Where are we? What's that over there? Sort of basically to get you warmed up. Mm. Then you were faced with a tactical situation and you had to do what's known as an appreciation of the situation, what they now call an estimate, which you delivered verbally. Mm. And then you had to make a plan and then you had to give orders. Mm. And then you had a tactical question, which was, you are advancing up the road here, you've got this, that, and the other, and that happens. What are you going to do now?
Mm. And who?
It took all day.
Yes. I mean, were you organised into small groups for this process?
Yes, but you were giving individual answers.
Yes.
You weren't giving answers like on a toot where, five of you are standing around and you say, Mr. Thompson, will you give the group solution? Wasn't that at all. It was individual, because you were being tested individually. So though you were given the questions as a group,
yes,
you were then called forward
individually.
And they had enough examiners there to get everyone at once. Mm. So they had, say, 10 people doing it.
And how many in your group? What was the size of the
syndicate? I can't remember. Mm. I can't remember, because we didn't work as a syndicate we weren't producing the answer as a syndicate. We were producing the answer individually.
And what kind of situation was it? Do you remember what was the scale of the...
It was sort of battalion level stuff.
Yes.
It was battalion level.
Mm. Do you remember where it was?
I think I remember that it was on I'm just trying to remember, because I have to sort out, because I was the examiner later, many years later, having been to Staff College on one of these, and we did it on Woodbury Common near Exeter. But this one was again, I think, near Exeter somewhere, out in the country.
So you had the practical
test. You had the practical exam. Then you couldn't take the written until you'd passed the promotion practical.
Yeah. So the promotion practical, get through that.
Get through that. Then you had this written exam.
Yeah.
And you did, and I rather sort of went off the subject there. You went on courses, and you also did there was a correspondence course which you did, which was aimed at this exam for written papers. So you got a question paper, which was usually a previous exam, that's how they did it, and then you wrote the answer, sent it to your tutor, who then sent it back having marked it. It was, you know, it's quite an industry, this you can imagine it, you know, hundreds of officers in the army all taking this exam, being catered for by this setup, which you had to pay for, which was a sort of distance learning, you'd call it nowadays.
Mm. Was this the Metropolitan College?
Yes, I think so. I think so.
And when you when you came to the exam, where did you take that? Was that taken?
Taunton.
At Taunton. So it again was at a command education centre,
presumably. Yes, yeah. Mm.
Who organised and ran the courses that you attended in preparation? That
was again organised through the district.
Yes.
So the district would slap out a notice saying, I remember he's a chap called Professor Lewis, used to teach military history. Mm. He's holding a course at Exeter University from X to Y. And then some of the tutors, like Lewis, I remember, used to come round to units. So he'd come down to Plymouth and hold tutorial sessions with all the candidates who happened to be stationed in the Plymouth area. I think he was paid for by the army, actually. But he would coach you through your military history. Mm. And then other people would be brought in to talk to you. Like, I remember, I mean, the papers I had to take, I was lucky in military history, were the Northwest European Campaign of 44-45 and the American Civil War. Mm. So we had dear old Essaim came to lecture to us about the Northwest European Campaign. Very good, too. Mm. And you took test papers. And what I did was I did as much as I could of the distance learning, but I then crammed the last of it all into 1 month, and I crammed myself, and then went off and did the exam.
What was the form of the exam? Was it the usual 3-hour paper?
Yes, yeah. Yes, and it lasted for a week or five days. Mm. So you took, I think, 2 papers a day. Mm. I don't think there were 10 papers, but there were quite a few. Mm.
And presumably then, how long did you have to wait before you got your results?
About 3 months, I think, something like that. And then you either got a promotion pass or a staff pass.
Yeah.
And I was lucky I got a staff pass, thanks to my military history. Mm. So I got selected to go to Camberley.
Mm. But, I mean, you also had to have a nomination, didn't you, besides a pass?
Yes, I had to have a nomination, yeah.
How was that done in the Marines?
Through the Marines. I mean, the Marines had nominated their own people.
Yes.
We had 4 places at Camberley. Mm. And we were... So the first thing you heard was someone said, congratulations, you've got a staff pass. Mm. And then you sat there with your fingers crossed, hoping you would get a nomination. Mm. Mm. And Camberley, of course, was the place to go, not Greenwich.
Why was that?
Greenwich was, you didn't have to have, because Marines could be sent to Greenwich without having taken an exam, like the Navy. So Greenwich was regarded as being very much a sort of down market option. And traditionally, certainly during my time in the Marines, I know it's different now, if you went to Greenwich, your chances of getting command or anything like that was zero.
Mm. So you got your place at Camberley. And when did you turn up there? Was that the following year?
No, we in those days there was a weapons staff course at Shrovenham, which I didn't go on, obviously, which was 2 years, and then there was the ordinary staff course, but it was deemed, which I went on, but it was deemed necessary for all people going to the staff college to do a 3-month stint at Shrovenham, to do a sort of poor man's version of the weapons course, if you like, in military science. So we all piled up, we all formed up at Shrivenham in September, I suppose, 1964, this is now, and did the 3 months, and it was the most boring course I think I've ever done.
What was wrong with it? Why was it boring?
Because it was taught in such a soulless and uninspiring manner.